Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:21 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 11th. I thought we'd kick off today looking at copper because it has pulled back sharply, but it is steadying in the region of the lower side of an 18-month range around this $2.50 area on the COMEX contract. And copper is, I think, often regarded as almost a litmus test for the health of the Chinese economy. And the fact that it is steadying is reasonably supportive of the view that China is getting a handle on the coronavirus. But I think we can notice just over the course of February so far, it has uniquely been unable to hold on to gains that were posted intraday. Every single one of the candles, barring the one day on the downside, has been unable to hold the intraday highs. This suggests that there is some uncertainty out there, that there is still a nagging concern that China may not yet have a handle on it. One of the contributing factors to the, I think, more bullish sentiment is that the number of official or confirmed cases has been declining since about the 4th of February, and copper has been steadying. Then I think it's also worth highlighting that oil prices have been steadying, but only barely so, in the region of the lower side of the range over the course of the last few years. It's pretty much approximating the lows now from early 2019, late 2018. And this is obviously a little steadying in the region of a low and a short-term oversold condition. So there is the potential that we're going to get some steadier action here. One of the main concerns is that it's looking increasingly likely that China has in fact reclassified the definition of what an infected person is. They don't seem to be counting the people that have got mild infections any longer. Now, if that's the case, they're ignoring the fact that mild cases can still infect healthy individuals, and the individual makeup of somebody's own personal biology and their susceptibility to severe disease is going to then influence whether they develop a more serious infection or not, and then subsequently also become a carrier. If China has decided that they would rather accept the negative repercussions of allowing this outbreak epidemic to turn into a pandemic rather than continue to slow down their economy and enforce quarantines in order to stamp it out, then that's obviously a very significant risk for the rest of the world. And it's the kind of thing that is already starting to institute people trying to bulk buy, to store up supplies. This is something that was very evident when we visited the local Chinese supermarket over last weekend. There were two things that really stood out was bottled water was completely gone off the shelves. There was a lot of the big sacks of rice had already been bought, and there was a notable lack of people. Generally speaking, mainland Chinese and the Taiwanese and Hong Kong people that most often frequent these supermarkets don't watch the Super Bowl, but there was not a lot of people there. And this is in Chinatown in Los Angeles. So obviously there aren't that many people that have been diagnosed with the virus in California, and most of those are already in quarantine. So there is obviously some panicky buying going on right now. Now, when we look at the global environment, we can certainly see that while China may be obfuscating in terms of the number of infections, they are clearly supporting their stock market, and it was in additional higher territory in here today. Then There is the fact that the S&P 500 was at a new high in here today, although it did not hold the intraday advance. And it's really quite overextended relative to the trend mean, and there is the potential that we're going to get some additional consolidation here. When we look at some of the largest shares in the index, then Microsoft, for example, has been accelerating, but it was well off its high in here today. Now, if it had closed a couple of dollars lower, it would have been a downside key reversal. But there is no doubting that it has accelerated and it is due some consolidation. So we could quite easily be heading into a consolidation for stock markets over the next couple of weeks. The Nasdaq, for example, is also really very overextended. It wasn't quite able to hold on to its advance either in here today. And the pace of the advance has been really very impressive. But when we then look at some of the regional Asian economies, and particularly their respective markets, well, for example, we can look at Indonesia and there we have the very big downward dynamic 3 weeks ago, and it is now encountering resistance around the 6,000 level. Well, it could quite easily bounce from this area, but if it fails around the 6,000 area and then moves on to a new low, well, then we can start to more confidently talk about top formation completion. The Malaysian market has a number of challenges already, but it has been trending downwards now for over 2 years. And the Thai index is, I think, a bit of a standout here because it has clearly encountered resistance around the 1600 point level, then it broke lower. It remains quite weak, and the Thai baht has clearly broken its uptrend. And this is a very significant dollar rally against the baht that's going on right now. Then, when we think about the Singapore dollar, it has generally been a safe haven currency, but when risks are focused on the Asian region, it does tend to take some of the brunt of selling. Now, when we look at the range over the course of the last 5 years, it's certainly above the base formation put in between 2011 and 2014. When we zoom out, it looks like a first step above that base because there was a very lengthy period of Singapore dollar appreciation all the way through from approximately 1986 onwards. And it does look like there's an important low in here. If the dollar sustains a move back above the 140 area, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term and potentially a medium-term period of underperformance by the Singapore dollar. Obviously, a number of the regional stock markets are highly dependent on demand from China. So while Chinese stimulus is certainly helping to support their domestic stock market, it has not yet leaked out into transformation of the demand profile for exports from the rest of Asia. Now, when we think about how is that going to impact the commodity sector, well, China started to get back to work in here today. The Australian dollar is at least steady here in the region of the lows from back in August and October. But it needs to do more than it's done so far in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I think we're at a rather important decision point here. Either we are at the low in terms of the commodity complex, and we certainly have the short-term oversold conditions to support the scope for a rebound, or this is a hiatus before things get worse. And this obfuscation of the way that they're defining how somebody is or how somebody fits into the category of being infected or not is a problem when it is viewed from the perspective of the global economy. And that is only going to lead to further isolation of China on the international stage if they are really endangering the rest of the world with pandemic. So there is obviously some uncertainty that it needs to be considered here. But as long as stock markets remain reasonably well bid and trading above their respective trend means, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside over the medium term, even while in the short term there is the risk of some pause and consolidation. Now, when we think about how that is likely to affect the gold price, well, gold has been really very steady against the US dollar, and at this very quiet period where it has literally been confined to a $50 range against a background where there has been a lot to worry about, that is supportive of the view that investors are looking for safe havens. Now, of course, if we were to redenominate it into euros, then gold has been better bid because the euro has been under pressure. The Brazilian real has been breaking on the downside, and gold has been breaking on the upside against it. When we look at another commodity currency, gold is on the cusp of breaking on the upside against the Canadian dollar. It's also holding the breakout above $2,300 against the Australian dollar. And when we look at the Indian rupee, it's very similar to the pattern we have for the US dollar. Part of the reason for that is the rupee has been particularly steady. And that's a bit of a standout compared to the volatility we've seen in a number of other Asian currencies. The Nifty index did pull back rather sharply over the course of the last few weeks, but it has rebounded and regained most of the decline. The most important thing, though, is that it bounced from the region of the trend mean. And when we look at this over the weekly, on the weekly chart, well, the defining characteristic of the trend over the last 2 years has been failed upside breaks. So far, this breakout has more or less held. And the fact that it is finding support in the region of the trend mean, that I think is supportive of the view that India could potentially benefit from this the wider geopolitical environment. So I think that's a rather important characteristic. When we think about the energy sector, I think there this change that has undergone or that the market is undergoing is really something that requires additional consideration. The S&P 500 energy sector is almost entirely weighted by oil companies and companies related to the fossil fuel sector, and it is back in the region of the lows from early 2019 and 2016, and it's pretty much mirroring the trajectory of the oil price. But when we look at renewable energy, then it's a completely different story. The solar ETF is breaking on the upside. The wind ETF has completed a 5-year range, in fact, excuse me, it's a 6-year range, and is now breaking on the upside. And the simple fact of the matter is that anything related to renewable energy, whether it is batteries, solar, wind, hydrogen, or renewable energy infrastructure, they're all breaking downtrends or breaking out of base formations or breaking out of long-term ranges and going in the exact opposite direction of the oil price. And this is really a rather new phenomenon. There's been a very clear correlation between oil prices and renewable energy for the foreseeable, well, for much of the last decade, because most of the renewables relied on a high oil price to really support the rationale for investing in them at all. But that's rapidly changing. There has been an acute change in government supports. There has been a very clear change in terms of voter sentiment towards the green sector, but also some of these I think technologies are starting to mature. Then we have the fact that natural gas prices are still trending downwards, right in the region of the lows from 2016, and that is a rather important phenomenon because it creates a much more compelling rationale for supporting the hydrogen sector. Obviously, using natural gas to produce hydrogen is not an escape from the fossil fuel cycle, but what it does suggest is that it will help to build out infrastructure, and when more economical ways of producing hydrogen, potentially renewably, then that is going to potentially then represent a death knell for some of the energy sector. Now, there is obviously a big consideration here that conventional energy is incredibly capital intensive, and unconventional energy, particularly the shale oil and gas, is doubly capital intensive. And then when we think about the way that the world is going, where we're getting very clear outperformance by renewables, one has to question whether the rationale for continuing to pour money into unconventional supply when prices are low and renewables are becoming more compelling is still going to get the green light from investors. And high yield energy spreads have got clear uptrend characteristics. A sustained move back above 600 basis points would, I think, really drive home the potential that we're going to get a wave of bankruptcies in the energy sector. And this is, I think, an existential threat. There is a real potential outcome here that some of the energy sector is going to disappear against the onslaught of the renewables, because we can clearly see that from the relative strength. That is, I think, a very new phenomenon. This is, I think, something that's been gathering now for a while, but we're starting to see the clear evidence of just standout performance by renewable energy, and that represents a very significant existential threat to the conventional energy sector. I think it is also worth considering that the primary argument that's been made to support energy over the course of the last 6 months has been the value proposition. There was a clear conclusion at the end of 2019 that it was the deep value proposition represented by energy was going to be one of the better performing sectors in 2020, and that is just not panning out. In fact, it could potentially be a value trap that is underappreciated by a lot of asset managers. So energy really does represent a really important change. And bear markets in energy do tend to support secular bull markets in the wider stock market because it removes a tax on consumption. So while we do have short-term overbought conditions, and there are certainly worries about the potential for a pandemic, that point is, I think, one of the most clearly defined bullish characteristics for the wider market. So it is a particularly important time to monitor the consistency of trends, but there's a lot more going on in terms of the global economy than is, I think, really being defined in terms of just the worry about the coronavirus. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.